It's time for America Outdoors Radio, the show that covers the outdoor scene across the U.S. of A. and the entire continent. Fishing, hunting, conservation, outdoor recreation, and great destinations, we cover it all every week. It's your country, your outdoors. Let's explore it together with your host, John Cruz.
Welcome to the show. I'd like to thank all the listeners who reached out about my little accident where I tore the tendon off of my right kneecap. That happened earlier this month at the Washington Sportsman Show. And actually, it didn't happen at the show. It happened at the motel I was staying at during the show. It was the last night of the show. Rolling into the final day, I decided to go out to the truck to give my dog a treat and literally just tripped and fell over a curb, and that's how I ruptured that tendon below the kneecap. I wish I had a better story for you, but that's the true one. Since then, I've had surgery, and I am now sporting a leg/knee brace. It goes basically from my shin all the way up towards my thigh, and I'm going to be wearing that for another 7 weeks. Apparently, according to the doctor, when I fell good, and that meant bad. So, wish me luck as I continue to heal. And maybe a few prayers for faster healing would be appreciated, because I'll tell you what, I am really hoping to go to the Bassmaster Classic in Oklahoma next month, but I'm unsure if I'm going to be able to be mobile enough to get in and out of a boat for the practice day with a pro, or to navigate several miles a day that you're going to walk at the sportsman show that's going to be there. Time will tell, but again, prayers would be appreciated. This week on the show, we've got a bevy of great guests for you. One of them is my old friend, Bob Loomis. You'll hear from him in just a minute. And he's got the lowdown on how to go about catching a trophy walleye. This is the best time of year to do it, as those females are in the pre-spawn mode and they are full of eggs. And he's going to tell you how to do it out on the West Coast and also in the Midwest. Different techniques are used this time of year. Another guest we'll talk to today is David Rayner. He is with the Alabama Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. And he wrote a very good article about the plight of bobwhite quail in Alabama. Things are not looking really great. It's all about habitat. And David will break down some of the issues that have really knocked back quail populations and some places where you can still get into some good quail in Alabama. Another guest we'll talk to today is Barry Sinico. He is the man behind the 59th annual Red River Valley Sportsman Show, taking place next week. Starts on the 29th, runs through March 3rd at the Fargo Dome in Fargo, North Dakota. Barry's got a great lineup of feature attractions and some really well-known seminar speakers, too, that you'll want to hear from. Our final guest of the day is Ian Rutter. He and his wife Charity are full-time fly fishing guides who fish the Great Smoky Mountains National Park for trout, and he's written a brand new book that is coming out in April titled The Fly Fishing Guide to Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Ian's going to tell us about the different types of trout you can catch at the national park here, and what kind of experiences you can have while fishing in the park, too, because it could be as easy or as hard as you want to make it. In addition to this, we've also got an update on that record-breaking crappie, or was it a record-breaking crappie, that was caught in Kansas by an angler named Bobby Parkhurst. As you may recall, the Kansas Department of Parks and Wildlife seized that fish from Mr. Garland and disqualified it from the record books, but didn't give much of an explanation why. Well, now, thanks to Dak Collins at Outdoor Life, we have a very clear explanation why, and there's a very good reason that it was disqualified from the record books. We'll tell you about this towards the end of the show today. Before we get into all that, though, let's check in with our first guest. Next up on America Outdoors Radio, we got my old friend Bob Loomis on the line. He's with Max Lure. It's a Pacific Northwest-based tackle company that makes a lot of lures for a lot of different species, to include walleye. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John.
So this is the time of year where you're looking for those big pre-spawn females, your best chance of the year to catch a true trophy. And how do you go about doing it? We'll start off in the Pacific Northwest. What are some tactics you would suggest folks do on places like the Columbia or Snake River?
Well, you know, predominantly those fish are going to be heading up to up underneath the dams, you know, on the Columbia or on the Snake. They're going to be up going up there to spawn. And, you know, you're looking at spawn time with the moon phase, everything else. Generally, you're looking at about sometime in April. And those big females are, you know, all of their production, all of their feed, everything that they've done is going into creating, you know, eggs, and they're going to spawn during that April time frame. So you're catching very, very large fish, you know, in upwards of 20 plus pounds.
So when it comes to targeting trophy walleye, is it bigger lures for bigger fish or no?
Well, of course. You start, when you're looking at a 20-pound walleye, a 20-pound walleye doesn't get to be 20 pounds by eating small, small baits. They're going to be predaceous. They're a very, very opportunistic fish. They're going to get whatever they can get. And if, you know, a big bait comes by, they're going to chase that over a small bait, especially if they think that it's something that they can get to. So, you know, a big bait works well for big fish. I was going to say, you know, using different types of products out there, a lot of guys are now starting to fish crankbaits out there, but a lot of people are still pulling bottom walkers with large profile lures like the Lollipop or the Cha-Cha crawler rig that are a longer, a little bit larger profile crawler harness setup, and that's what everybody's going to.
And we should point out that the Lollipop and the Cha-Cha crawler rig and quite a few other walleye offerings from Max Lure, they have the patented spile blade. It's much different than a regular metal blade, and it's pretty effective if you want to troll slow, isn't it?
Correct. And, of course, this time of the year, with the cold water, you're going to want to slow troll because of the fact that, you know, like I said, walleye are very, very opportunistic. They see something going through there that's going way slower than they can go. They're going to work on it. They're going to work it over. Being able to slow troll with that smile blade and, you know, and get that attraction and draw to the bait works fantastic.
Let's head from the Pacific Northwest to the Midwest. Places like Lake of the Woods or Lake Erie or some of the other great lakes where you find walleye, they're fishing for them a little bit different over there than they are in the Pacific Northwest, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Early in the season, predominantly Midwest on East, early in the season, most everybody's fishing jigs because of the fact the water's still really cold. And the bait of choice is going to be jig fishing. And that new Smileblade slow drop jig that we came up with has gone over extremely well for that style of fishing.
Well, the bottom line is this, folks. If you are after the walleye of a lifetime, right now and through March is the time to go, whether you're fishing in the Midwest or the Pacific Northwest. And now you've got some ideas of what to use and some specific lures as well. And you can find Max Lure products in quality sporting goods stores all over the nation. And you can also find them online anytime at maxlure.com. That's M-A-C-K-S, maxlure.com. Bobby, thanks for the rundown. I appreciate it.
You bet, John.
Finally, I've got a fun story to share from Target Walleye, where a couple actually got married out on the ice surrounded by tip-ups. The couple in question identified simply as Crystal and Jeremy, and the original plan was there for to be tip-ups surrounding the ceremony site. If a tip-up went off during the ceremony, they would pause the service and run and get the fish. But since the temperature outside ended up being minus 22 degrees without wind chill, they just set up one tip-up instead. Now, after the ceremony, one of the groomsmen signaled flag, and the couple ran to get to the fish. Unfortunately, Crystal tripped on her way there, but fortunately, she didn't get hurt, and instead smiled and laughed it off. I wish I could say anything about my fall. Either way, very humorous story. The couple is going to spend their honeymoon ice fishing through Canada. Sounds like a fun couple and a fun time. Stick around. We've got more of the outdoor coming your way right after this short break.
When you think of WorkSharp knife and tool sharpeners, you probably think of sharpeners for the shop or the field, but WorkSharp has a whole lineup of sharpeners for the kitchen too. We're talking about everything from easy-to-use manual and electric knife sharpeners to ceramic honing rods, whetstones, and the new rolling knife sharpener, an innovative manual sharpener that will do wonders for your cutlery. Make sure there's never a dull moment in your kitchen. Check out the entire product line and order today at WorkSharpTools.com. That's WorkSharpTools.com. Immerse yourself in a complete Alaska wilderness experience through Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Up to six of you will spend a week in a beautiful waterfront log home in a secluded cove. Every day is a new adventure. Go on a guided fishing trip or haul in a bounty of shrimp and crab. Visit a Native American village where totem poles are carved. Go on a whale or bear watching trip and return back to your very own place at the end of the day. Find out more about the Alaska Wilderness Experience at alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com.
John Cruz here, looking to improve your bottom line as a business that caters to outdoors enthusiasts? You can do so for a very cost-effective price by advertising on America Outdoors Radio. I will tailor a marketing campaign for you, reaching hundreds of thousands of listeners every weekend, tuning into our show on 135 stations in 33 states. We've got a sponsor opening right now, so contact me through my website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com and let's talk about helping you.
Come explore the Dalles in Oregon for outdoors fun. Hike amongst the wildflowers, bike our riverfront trail, or visit the Gorge Discovery Center where you can enjoy a live raptor display, or even check out our National Neon Sign Museum. But don't forget the fishing. We've got salmon, steelhead, bass, walleye, and monster-sized sturgeon waiting just for you. When the day is done, tell those tall tales at one of our wineries, breweries, or restaurants, and plan your next adventure. Find out more at explorethedalles.com.
Backcountryhunters.org. Join the fight for our public lands and waters today.
You're back in with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. Our next stop is the state of Alabama. We're going to talk to David Rayner. He is with the Alabama Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. And he just wrote a great article about the uphill battle that bobwhite quail are facing in Alabama and other southeastern states as well. David, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, John.
So let's talk a little bit about bobwhite quail and the way it used to be back in the 70s when you and I were growing up. Go ahead and tell us about how good it was in Alabama when it comes to bobwhite quail hunting.
Well, I hunted in Alabama and Mississippi growing up, and my father was an avid bird hunter, and he always had quality bird dogs that he had trained himself, and we had wide ranges of places where we could hunt, and it wouldn't be uncommon for us to, you know, to raise 6 to 8 coveys in a half a day, and it was some fantastic hunting. But, you know, that was in the 70s, and it slowly started to decline. You know, by the 80s, it was pretty tough to locate more than a couple of coveys in a half a day, and so it slowly faded away, and my late father's last bird dog got killed, and this was in the late 80s, and he said, well, there's not enough wild birds to justify me training another dog. So that was the end of his quail hunting, which is really sad. And now we're not having very much success in restoring the quail populations in the South. And, I addressed in my column that was, you know, on OutdoorAlabama.com, was that the habitat has changed so much because of the farming techniques now go from, you know, tree line to tree line with a very little cover for the quail. And, you know, back in the day when you and I were growing up, everybody had small gardens or there were small farms that had lots of fence rows and, you know, weeds and stuff where the quail could find cover and food, you know, because they eat a lot of weed seeds and bugs, which are found in those things. And, that has kind of gone away. And so we're stuck with, if you want to do a lot of shooting, you're going to have to go to a plantation or a lodge that has white conditioned pin raised quail, because, you know, the wild quail are just pretty scarce. And, you know, you can go out and get a lot of exercise and have a lot of dog work, but you may not necessarily come home with any wild quail.
Yep, I call it hiking with a gun. I do that plenty over here where I live in Washington State, and it's funny you say that because the story of pheasant here in the Pacific Northwest is very similar to the story of quail in the Southeast, where habitat loss has just decimated populations. And something that really caught my interest in your article was it's not just the small farms and efficient farming practices that have eliminated habitat where these quail can hunker down and live. It's also timber. And I just never thought about timber as being important to quail, but timber harvesting practices are an issue too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the thing is, quail are, stay on the ground most of their lives. And so if the sunlight doesn't reach ground, they don't have the habitat they need, to survive. And timber prices down here are so low that, the people that who are harvesting timber are doing it because they have to, not because the prices are good. And so that means that there's not much going on. And, unless that sunlight hits the ground, the forbs and greenery are not going to grow. And so that, plus, I talked about fire, we got to make sure we put fire through these fans and, control burns because, that green stuff that pops up, within a week or so after the fire goes through is exactly the kind of food that the bobwhites are looking for when they're, ranging around in the timber.
Alabama does have some public lands. Are some of those public lands being managed for the benefit of bobwhite quail?
Well, most of the wildlife management areas or WMAs are multi-use areas, and there's one, Boggy Hollow, is kind of a test site for the bobwhites and, try to maximize the habitat there and see how they respond. But overall, our WMAs have to be managed for, obviously the most popular species, which is white-tailed deer, turkey, and, we have small game rabbit, squirrel, but they do what they can. Well, a lot of the habitat management also for those species benefit bobwhite quail. But that's, again, Boggy Hollow is the only area where we have specifically designed the management program to benefit bobwhites.
Now, I know the private plantations and lodges, they'll have pen-raised quail that are released that hunters can go after. What about the state of Alabama? Do you actually raise quail and release them on some of your wildlife management areas?
No, we don't do that because studies have shown that they don't survive very well in the wild. The property is not, intensively managed. So we leave that to the lodges and the plantations, and, they do their best to raise those quail and have them flight conditioned so they can simulate a wild hunt as best as possible. It's not going to always be the same, but it's going to be as close as they can get with these flight-conditioned pen-raised birds.
Despite the fact that quail numbers are down, you still have about 10,000 hunters a year that go after quail. Are most of them doing it on public lands, or are they mainly doing it on these private plantations and lodges?
It's a combination. There are some hunting clubs that, have suitable habitat for quail, and, they may have bust a covey during deer season, and they say, we're going to come back after deer season and hunt these quail. But a lot of them are, these dedicated quail hunters who will go all over the state if they can find, a place that has wild quail, and especially, they love their dogs so much, they want to work their dogs as much as possible, and they just do that as often as they can. And, and some of these plantations are large enough that they have some areas that have wild quail, and you hunt those on occasion, but you can't put much pressure on wild quail or they'll leave.
Well, definitely an uphill battle for the bobwhite quail in Alabama and the Southeast in general. If you want to read the article, it's a good one. Just go to OutdoorAlabama.com. It's OutdoorAlabama.com, and check out this story written by David Rayner. And I should also add that if you are interested in helping the quail recover and rebound throughout the United States, go to quailforever.org. That's an organization that does a great job preserving and building sustainable habitat for quail. The website again, quailforever.org. David, thanks for sharing this on America Outdoors Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
Planning a day at the range or plinking targets with your friends? Or maybe you're looking to do some small game hunting with a rimfire rifle. Either way, they're going to be impressed when you show up with a Henry Golden Boy lever action rifle. This beauty has a brass light finish, a wooden stock and grip, and a blue 20-inch octagon barrel that makes this rifle handle great, and it is accurate too, especially for offhand shooting. Want to up your Golden Boy rifle game? You can order a deluxe engraved edition or one with a personalized inscription. Like every rifle manufactured by Henry Repeating Arms, this has a lifetime guarantee. Find out more about the world-famous Golden Boy rifle and order a free catalog too at henryusa.com. That's henryusa.com for Henry Repeating Arms, made in America, and a proud sponsor of America Outdoors Radio.
Hunt of a Lifetime is a nationwide nonprofit organization dedicated to providing hunting and fishing trips to youth 21 and under who suffer from life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. These adventures make big differences in the lives of those who participate in them, and in many cases are literally a dream come true that brings hope and therapy to their lives. Find out more, get involved, or donate today at huntofalifetime.org. That's huntofalifetime.org. huntofalifetime.org.
Explore the Dalles, the hub where discovery and history come together. Whether the Northwest is your home or you're on an adventure, the Dalles welcomes you. Just 80 miles east of Portland is the perfect year-round escape with a community that cares about you. 300 days of sun, breathtaking outdoor recreation, and a downtown full of the unexpected. Oh, and the rich history that began before the Oregon Trail. Start planning at explorethedalles.com.
Next up on America Outdoors Radio, we are taking you to Fargo, North Dakota. That's not only the home of one of our affiliates, WZFG 92.3, as well as WZFG 1100, but it's also the location where the 59th annual Red River Valley Sportsman Show is taking place February 29th to March 3rd, and we've got the promoter on the line, Barry Sinico. Barry, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Barry, this is a really big show for the Midwest. Tell us a little bit about it and where your attendees are coming from.
Sure. So, our 59th annual Red River Valley Sportsman Show is going to be February 29th to March 3rd at the Fargo Dome. And throughout those years, we've been through about four different venues, starting quite small in the late 60s until we're at the Fargo Dome, which I believe is still the largest non-government building in North Dakota. So, we are North Dakota and Northern Minnesota's largest sports show. And we really draw in a big circle, you know, anything from Jamestown to the west to Winnipeg to the north, down to Alexandria in the south, and way past, you know, almost to Leech Lake on the east. So, you know, anything within 3 to 4 hours in a big old circle, people come to the sportsman show.
I get it. I completely get it. And, you know, so far this year, attendance at sportsman shows across the country has been very good. I think people are just hungry to get back out there again. And that shows by the attendance of these shows. I understand you do 20,000 people to your show, is that right?
Yeah, we really do. And a big part of that is where we are, the fact that, you know, the nearest what I would consider a competitor is at least 5 to 6 hours away for a show. And, you know, we work hard to bring a really nice quality show between the entertainment we have, the seminar speakers we have, and then just the fact that we've got, you know, over 100 resorts and lodges, including mom-and-pop tackle shops or really big retail operations like Reed Sporting Goods. You know, they've got a very large location. They've been with us for at least 30 years. So people know what to expect. If they've been to the show before, they absolutely know what they're going to get.
Now, every promoter that I've ever dealt with when it comes to sportsman shows always tries to have a special feature or attraction. And it looks like you've got a pretty good one. Tell us about the Bawana Jim Wildlife Show.
Yeah, Bawana Jim puts on a great presentation, and, you know, people go to our website, fargosportshow.com. We've got a picture of him with some of his critters, and we have a video of him on there. And always a great resource, too, to look at show hours, look at the seminar schedule, see when the Bawana Jim events are on at fargosportshow.com. And what's interesting about Jim, and I've been using him for probably 20 years, you never know what he's going to bring.
Oh.
You know, it might be a huge 100-year-old turtle and crocodiles and alligators, or it may be foxes and platypuses and giant cobra snakes, and you just never know what he's going to bring until he shows up. So I typically say, Jim, what do you got in the box? And he'll start telling me stuff.
That's funny. And, you know, it's getting tougher to have these exotic wildlife shows. I know that the people that run these exotic wildlife farms have to jump through all sorts of hoops anymore. And a lot of them have just given up because there's too many hoops to jump through. So I think it's great that you've actually still got one that's going on here.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things growing up as a kid was Victor the Wrestling Bear. And if you're a certain age and you've been to a sports show, you remember Victor, where you would literally go on the stage and wrestle a bear. And then, you know, after some legislation, all the fun came to an end. But that's what happens, so you move on. Then you hire Twiggy.
That is funny. Something else we should talk about is the fact that you've got some fishing and hunting seminars, and boy, oh boy, you've got Jason Mitchell that's going to be there. That's quite a pro.
Yeah, I'm really proud of both the guys we have there this year. You know, we typically do two fishing guys, or we'll do a hunting and a fishing guy. I kind of debuted a new hunting seminar speaker at our St. Cloud Sportsman Show we had about 10 days ago, and he did a fantastic job, and I'm absolutely bringing him to Fargo and Sioux Falls next year. So this year, we are very happy to have Jason Mitchell. He's an old friend of ours. And he's going to be doing seminars all 4 days of the show, and he's going to be concentrating on tackle modifications that catch more walleye, and also do's and don'ts with forward-facing sonar. And forward-facing sonar is still kind of new to me. I've seen it at our last show. I got to see it. But that'll be an interesting one to take in, because that seems to be the next big move in electronics. And then another good friend of ours, Joe Henry, he's the Convention and Visitors Bureau director from Lake of the Woods in Minnesota. So this guy knows fishing. He's also a professional charter captain. And he's going to be talking multi-species fishing, success on any body of water. And he'll also be talking master's level spinners for walleyes. Now, what's really nice at the show, we've got seminars going near continuous in conjunction with Bawana Jim. So if you've walked around for 3-4 hours, you want to sit down, take in a seminar, you want to take in Bawana Jim, you know, that's really up to you. And again, always a good idea. And we've got show programs at the entry. You can grab a program, you know what's going on for that day. But you can really plan your trip around what's important to you. And I always tell people, plan on 4 hours, a minimum of 4 hours. You don't want to run through the show. If you do, you're going to miss something good.
Let's talk about things for the kids. It looks like you've got a trout pond that's open, and I know that the kids always love those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we wouldn't do a show without our trout pond. I just spoke to our provider yesterday and ordered a fresh 400 pounds of the trout, which is typically about 500 to 600 fish. And it's just a couple of bucks. You come in, you fish for 7 minutes. If you catch the trout, we put them in the bag, put your name on it, put it on ice. You're not carrying this thing around. That would be no good. But when you're ready to leave, just come back. We give you your fish. You go home, a little bit of cleaning, get out the oil and the flour, and you got a nice trout dinner.
Sounds good to me. And sticking with the kids, you've actually got some kids fishing workshops. And that's a little unusual, but I love the idea.
Yeah, we really believe in getting the next generation introduced to the great sport of fishing. So we work with Shields, the great folks at Shields. And on Saturday at 11 a.m., Sunday at 12 noon, at the seminar stage, they produce a kids fishing clinic. And, you know, they keep it fun, they keep it interactive, and they have a good time with the kids. They don't keep it too long because, you know, kids can get a little bored. And they got a lot of great prizes at the end. They get a goodie bag. So just something to do, go up there, get the kids laughing and joking and having a good time. And then afterwards, they just go around the rest of the show.
All right. So in addition to all the exhibitors that are going to be guides, you've also got a boat show that's going on there, an RV and camping show, all sorts of things to see and do at the 59th annual Red River Valley Sportsman Show in Fargo, February 29th to March 3rd. Is there a website folks should go to find out more?
Absolutely. If they go to FargoSportsShow.com, they can take in the hours, the seminars. You can buy tickets right at the door, or if you want to avoid the crowd, say on a Saturday, you can buy the tickets online.
All right.
At FargoSportsShow.com.
Okay. FargoSportsShow.com. That's the website to go to. Make plans to head to this sportsman show in Fargo. Again, Thursday, February 29th through Sunday, March 3rd. It looks like it's going to be all sorts of fun. Thanks so much for sharing this with us today. I appreciate it, and I hope you have a great show.
Will do. Look forward to seeing everybody at the show.
Do you love to fish? Do you love to eat fish? Well, if you do, you know how important it is to have something to keep things sharp. Now, in the boat, it might be something to keep your hook sharp, like maybe the pocket knife sharpener from WorkSharp, which also works just fine, along with the guided field sharpener for keeping fillet knives sharp. So when it comes to cleaning those fish you catch for the day, you can get that done in a hurry. And let's not forget, back at the house, when you're preparing those fish for a meal, that's when you want to have a kitchen knife sharpener, and there's several electric ones available. You can find them all at WorkSharpTools.com, which lists all sorts of both manual and electric sharpeners you can use in the kitchen, in the shop, or in the field. Sharp hooks and sharp knives make for a happy day on the water, so get your sharpener today at WorkSharpTools.com or look for these products at quality sporting goods stores and hardware stores near you.
In today's news, I'm cooking a brisket. Let's go to Jill at my house to see how it's going.
This is your house and you brought me and the crew to check on your brisket?
That's correct, Jill. How's it looking?
This is a Camp Chef Woodwind Wi-Fi. You know you can check your cook right from your phone, right?
I didn't know that was an option, Jill. Well, never mind. But before you leave, can you feed the dog?
What? No.
When we get back, why is my check engine light on? The answer may shock me.
We've been telling you about Sportsman's Cove Lodge in Southeast Alaska for a while now. They're truly Alaska's best lodge. Wildlife is abundant, from bears and deer to eagles and whales. And let's not forget the reason you're here, the fishing. Halibut, salmon, lingcod, rockfish, true cod, and more. It's all waiting for you in abundance at Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Book your trip today at alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com for Sportsman's Cove Lodge.
Hunt of a Lifetime is a nationwide nonprofit organization dedicated to providing hunting and fishing trips to youth 21 and under who suffer from life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. These adventures make big differences in the lives of those who participate in them, and in many cases are literally a dream come true that brings hope and therapy to their lives. Find out more, get involved, or donate today at huntofalifetime.org. That's huntofalifetime.org. huntofalifetime.org.
I'm Anthony Imperato, president of Henry Repeating Arms. Patriotic Americans are looking to protect and provide for their families, now more than ever. Henry has over 200 rifles and shotguns to choose from, made in America or not made at all, and backed by a lifetime guarantee. Go to henryusa.com and order our free catalog, decals, and a list of dealers in your area. That's henryusa.com. Thank you, and God bless America.
Attention, small business owners. This could be the most important 10-minute call you will ever make. You may be eligible to receive up to $26,000 per employee through the Employee Retention Credit. Call Omega Accounting Solutions to see if your business is eligible to recover payroll tax pay during the pandemic. All it takes is a quick, easy, free 10-minute consultation to determine your qualifications. Call Omega Accounting Solutions at 800-309-ERC. Omega's knowledgeable staff will streamline the process of filing complicated paperwork. Omega is the small business champion with teams dedicated to maximizing tax credits. CPAs even turn to Omega for ERC guidance. Take advantage of this exclusive small business tax credit before it's too late. The 3-year sunset deadline is setting soon. So find out if you qualify today. Call 800-309-ERC. That's 800-309-ERC. Or visit OmegaTaxCredits.com.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
You're back in with America Outdoors Radio. We are taking you to Tennessee. As a matter of fact, we're taking you to a national park. That would be the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. And we're going to talk about a brand new book that is coming out. It's the Fly Fishing Guide to Great Smoky Mountains National Park. And the author is with us today, Ian Rutter. Ian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John.
So, Ian, you've definitely got a great background for this. You and your wife, Charity, are actually full-time fishing guides, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
I presume the Great Smoky Mountains National Park is where a lot of the streams are that you fish?
Yes, we've done some tailwater stuff here in East Tennessee over the years, but at this point we're exclusively inside the national park where we guide now.
What kind of trout are you finding in the streams inside this national park?
Well, we've got three species. We have rainbow, brown, and brook trout. But I always emphasize it's most important to recognize that they're all wild trout. The National Park maintains all the streams as wild fisheries. And a few of the streams in the lower elevations also have smallmouth bass as well. But they're definitely in the minority just because of the habitat available for them.
What kind of size are we talking about when it comes to the trout in the National Park?
Well, anywhere in the eastern United States where it's a mountain stream and completely wild, fish tend to be a lot smaller. And inside our national park, the fish are going to be predominantly in the 6 to 8 inch range. There are larger fish. A 9 or 10 inch fish is not at all unreasonable to expect. But by the time you start getting to a foot long or larger, the fish do become quite rare. But every year throughout the park, wherever there are brown trout, occasionally someone will catch an 18 to 24 inch brown trout. And when you're looking at the size of the stream, that's really impressive. But I always emphasize to people, that's the exception, not the norm.
In your book, how many different streams or fisheries do you talk about?
Oh, gosh. It's got to be at least 15 watersheds.
Sure.
Inside the national park, there's about 1,000 linear miles of water with fish in it. And any one watershed is, you know, completely contained, where composed of smaller streams at higher elevations that merge into bigger streams that merge with another stream into, you know, eventually a larger stream that exits the national park and goes on into a bigger river. But there's just a staggering amount of water in our park.
I hate to do this to you, but I'm going to do this to you. What is your favorite stream that you and Charity like to fish, and what kind of fish are you catching out of it?
Well, yeah, I always kind of say most of the time my favorite is the one I'm on at the moment. They're all relatively similar. There's some, you know, kind of splitting hair differences. And I always kind of tell people to think about what type of experience are you looking for, where some people might have a week and the ability to backpack, and you can quite literally get 15 miles or more from a road. And, you know, be on the fish that very few of them are even aware there's such a thing as fake bugs, you know, flies with hooks in them. Or if you've only got 2 hours, there's plenty of mileage right next to a road that's relatively easy to access. So I always tell kind of people, you know, when you're thinking about what you want to do, is it something that you really want to get way, way away from, or a little bit away, or you only have a little bit of time to get out and get the fishing in and be back to meet the family for dinner or lunch or whatever.
Now, the Fly Fishing Guide to Great Smoky Mountains National Park, it's more than just different streams, you know, a where to. You also get into how-tos in terms of seasonal strategies, tactics, and techniques as well, don't you?
That's right. And, you know, one of the things that we've seen in our well over 20 years, almost 30 years of guiding now, is that people from all over the country that come here kind of get a little bit puzzled by our fish, and they're just so much more difficult than most Rocky Mountain fish, Western fish, or even other areas, even here in our part of the world, the bigger rivers like the South Holston or Watauga. And part of it is they're just scared of their own shadow. They just have almost a sixth sense about anglers or anything else being out there, and they're so skittish. And add to that, the streams are really pretty steep. There's a lot of white water, a lot more white water than most people are used to fishing in. And depending on the stream, it can be kind of tight casting conditions. And you start combining this all together, and you get into a situation that's pretty unfamiliar for a lot of anglers. And it's not at all unusual for us to take people from Michigan or Pennsylvania, New York, places where people have trout and plenty of them, and they trout fish a lot. And they're just like, wow, this is not at all like what I'm used to. And it's, you just kind of have to tweak their game just a little bit. You know, it's not the difference between fishing for largemouth bass and brook trout, but it's, you know, you just got to tweak your game. And kind of once we always tell people and where the goal line is and things like that, kind of tell them what the points on the field are, then they can figure it out much easier.
All right. You and Charity are full-time guides, R&R Fly Fishing, and the website to go to, folks, rnrflyfishing.com, if you want to book a trip. Are these like day-long walk-and-wade fishing adventures?
Yes, we do half day or full day, just kind of depending on people's schedules and the time of year. Like in March, a lot of times in March you can do a full day, but sometimes just based on the weather, the mornings just may not be very good because it's so cold and the fish aren't moving and there's no bugs. But we do half days or full days, and the half days during the cooler times of the year are better in the afternoon, and in the hotter times of the year, if you're doing a half day, you'd probably prefer to do it in the morning.
All right, well, there you go, folks. Again, if you want to get this book, it's a brand new book. It's The Fly Fishing Guide to Great Smoky Mountains National Park. You could go to Amazon and pre-order, but a better bet would be to go to Ian's website, and you'll find that at rnrflyfishing.com. Go to the store page. And not only can you get an autographed copy of the book, but you'll also get a nice print as well as an added bonus. That website, again, rnrflyfishing.com. Just go to the store tab and order this book today. And, hey, if you're going to be in the Great Smoky Mountains, maybe book a trip with Ian and Charity as well. Sounds like it'd be a great day on the water. Ian, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
It's time for the Trail of Shame.
Shame, shame on you. Shame, shame on you.
Stories of poachers, scoundrels, and other ne'er-do-wells. So if you see someone committing a criminal act on the water or in the field, turn them in. It's the right thing to do.
As you may recall, we told you the story about a state record crappie caught in Kansas by Bobby Parkhurst and the fact that the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks seized that fish from Parkhurst's home and took it off the record books. But there was no real explanation as to why that occurred. Well, now we've got some clarity thanks to Outdoor Life and news editor Dak Collins, who has been following this story. Now, this crappie was caught on March 5th of 2023. At a small public reservoir near Manhattan, Kansas. And Parkhurst first weighed his fish at a bait shop, where it fell short of breaking the state record. Kansas Department of Parks and Wildlife says that Parkhurst then apparently stuffed the fish with ball bearings before visiting another certified scale to obtain the heavier weight of 4.07 pounds that initially qualified it as a state record. As for those ball bearings, yep, they were still in there when the Kansas Department of Parks and Wildlife Conservation officers seized that fish and provided an X-ray, which you can see at OutdoorLife.com, showing exactly what happened. The person who broke this case open is actually the initial bait shop owner, who said that the fish weighed just 3.73 pounds on his certified scale. So he became very suspicious when he found out that it was certified as a 4.07 pound crappie. In the shop owner's words, now that's a discrepancy. Kansas Wildlife and Parks did refer the case against Parkhurst to the local county attorney's office. However, the attorney, for whatever reason, has declined to prosecute the angler. One other thing that they dug up at Outdoor Life is that public court records show that Parkhurst has been implicated in several cases and charged with at least five felonies in Kansas since 2019. Most recently, he was convicted of one felony count of identity theft in October and sentenced to 18 months probation. Well, who knows? Maybe this will qualify as a probation violation, and maybe he will spend a little time in jail. At any rate, though, Bobby Parkhurst, this week, you are the one walking our trail of shame.
Shame on you.
And on that note, it is time to go. Here's hoping you're healthy and blessed in the days ahead, and that you get your dose of Mother Nature this week, too. After all, it is your country and your outdoors, so get out there and enjoy it.